I did have this friend in the 1000 BC. We discover a bevy of bathing beauties. Her bird looks to me and I says to he, why don't we jump in that old Euphrates?
So that's the whole story. That's all you gotta tell?
You got to listen to my rap from bell to bell. Those babies had rabies and we was in Hades cause we moved with the harem of the prince of Akhenaten.
Which you and her bird in the 1000 BC.
To our necks is sand like a sea. By assaulting with a sword and a lock and a key.
Ooh, they're in deep, will they ever get free?
So it's me and her bird in 1000 BC. Praying to the gods.
And what do you see?
A man with the halo and a nasty decree. I'll save your butt, but you gonna serve me. I nod to her bird, he nods to me. And when the magic is over, we ain't men, we genie. Bob your head, Max. We were buried to our necks in sand like a sea. Found something with a sword and a lock and a key. I looked to a bird and he says to me, and when the magic is over, we ain't men, we genie. What are we, Max?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be talking about Paul M. Glazer's 1996 film Kazam and Kenneth Johnson's 1997 film Steel. Joining me for the first time in the city of Los Angeles is my regular co-host, Tyler. How's it going, sir?
Ben, if Steel Panther isn't a house band for this podcast soon, I might have to quit.
All right, so for people who don't know what Steel Panther is,
I'll just stay tuned,
because, we're gonna get into that in a little bit. Joining us, we have two very special guests, the Reyes brothers, which makes them sound way cooler than each one individually. But to introduce each one of them individually, we have Free Reyes, a.k.a. Mazer, or actually, we just are in the process of getting rid of those fake names at GeekTire.com, so now he's officially known as Free Reyes at GeekTire.com. Free, how's it going, sir?
Good. Just enjoying a very, very cold office after being in a hot house all day. So
nice. That's got to be fairly refreshing.
It is. It's awesome.
Are you a daddy, Free?
I am a dad.
Do you ask the question, who's your daddy, to your child every day?
No, but I will now.
All right.
Who is your daddy and what does he do?
Those are my cookies.
Those were those early Arnold Schwarzenegger soundboards back on like E-Bombs World back in like, 2002 were always my favorite.
For YouTube. But,
yep. All right. Well, joining us also is Free's brother, Eli Reyes. How's it going, Eli?
It's going good.
First time.
Yes.
First time.
You guys may know him as Abe Froman from Geek Tyrant, but again, now it's
dropping the Abe.
Yeah. Eli Roth.
Right. So, all right, cool. Well, if you guys are just joining us for the first time, we start every episode with the character name game, transition into our media consume section where we talk about what we've been watching, move into our review of the week, and finish with listener voicemails and emails. You can always leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566 or email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com, and you can find this and every other episode of this podcast at notjustnewmovies.com.
Ben.
Yes.
I thought for a second that the main character's name in Lie to Me was Eli, but I just got that confused because the actor's name is Tim Roth.
Right.
Okay. So his name's not Eli.
Eli Roth is a director of Hostel and things
like that. Yeah, the body horror
right.
genre.
Yeah. Torture porn. And
torture like porn, that's right. It.
Yeah.
Body horror is more of the video drone guy.
Cronenberg. Yeah. All right. Well, let's start this thing off. I've got the character name game. Since Tyler is actually sitting right next to me, he is not going to be playing this because he saw me choose the character name. So I'm going to give this to to the Reyes brothers. Yes. Yeah, so Arturo Mendez is the name for this week. If you guys want to think about that, see if you can figure out what movie that character is from, we'll come back at the very end of the episode and see if you can guess.
Arturo Mendez.
And you have to keep in mind also that this character is loosely associated with some form of connection to a movie that came out in theaters this past weekend. So
is he one of the Menendez brothers?
Mendez, not Mendez.
Right, yeah. Just one end.
And yes.
Mendez. And there are possible brothers in this. It's kind of unclear.
He didn't murder his parents?
Oh, no, no.
That's back.
Not real life scenarios here, but.
Okay, never mind.
All right, well, let's move into the media consume section. This is the part of the show where we talk about what we've been watching, any sort of cool events we've been to or concerts or anything of that nature. Tyler, we typically start with you. Let's keep that alive. What have you been consuming since you've been out here in Los Angeles?
I've been in Los Angeles for about a week now, and almost a week. Been kicking hobos and buying lattes and stuff like that. Went and saw Conan this week, not Conan the Barbarian, episode 98, but Conan O'Brien at his show, aptly titled Conan. Warner Brothers a lot, all that stuff. Waited around for a while, thought it'd be, you know, pretty good show. Mediocre at best.
Well, who are the guests?
John Cryer,
yep,
of Pretty in Pink fame. Moon Bloodgood of Terminator Salvation fame. And Jason Mraz of little to no fame. The best part, I think, was Jimmy Pardo, and I've talked about him before. He's like the opening. He's like the warm-up guy. So he comes out and kind of talks to people and gets them laughing before the big C comes out. Not cancer.
The flaming C.
But yeah, I mean, it's if you really love Conan like I do, it's regardless of the guest lineup, I think it was worth it. Although the next day they had Will Ferrell and Tenacious D on the show.
Oh my gosh, you missed out.
Face, yeah.
Well,
thanks, Los Angeles.
They
throws face across room.
They we went to try to see if we could get standby tickets for that one, and of course they were like, absolutely not. We're doing this only for people who reserved it.
And
months
I was thinking
ago
about that
when they had no idea what show they were reserving it for.
And I'm thinking maybe like Warner Brothers allows like people who work there to go, like gets like first dibs, and then their friends too.
Maybe
because I think a lot of the Warner Brothers people are like, John Cryer, who gives a shit? We don't need to go see that one. But Will Ferrell, like, and Tenacious D, like,
maybe
that's where the Warner Brothers people get like first dibs.
Yeah, I can see that.
So that's why we, the public, don't maybe we don't get to get.
Yeah,
jump
all speculation,
on that.
But
oh yeah, you get a lot of time to think in that line,
right?
So that was pretty cool. I mean, much love to Conan. I love the show. Just John Cryer, whatever. Also went and saw Steel Panther, a heavy metal genre band down at the Hollywood Strip. Still got my wristband on from that. Ben, you've seen them twice now, I think.
Yep.
How outrageous was that show?
That was really outrageous. Steel Panther is a band that basically performs, they tour the country, I think, lightly, but they are essentially kind of a house band for the House of Blues on the Sunset Strip. And they, because they fit in so well with the vibe of the strip, you know, they're like a throwback band to like the mid 80s hair metal. I talked about them once on this podcast before when I saw them the first time, and they do, you know, cover songs and stuff, but you were kind of surprised, I think, that they actually did more
original
stuff.
Yeah, they did some
stuff.
Original songs, but as it turned out, pretty entertaining original songs.
Yeah.
Real outrageous language. There was nudity.
Yeah.
From audience members.
Yeah.
So two huge thumbs up there. it got pretty graphic, pretty vulgar, and that's what you sign up for. So
yeah,
thoughts and prayers out to Steel Panther.
Exactly. All right.
Yeah, LA's been all right though.
Okay. Any other LA
got
land?
Scarface-esque mansion of yours. Like, I don't think people know how well off you are out here.
I think you're drastically.
I don't know. It's pretty big, man.
Overestimating this big place.
I see that Hollywood sign right from your patio-esque area. Or maybe a couple feet away.
This is a modest to us apartment, but yeah.
Anyway. I heard your apartment has a spiral staircase. So
it does.
That's pretty Scarface.
Yeah.
Awesome.
He recreates the scene almost every morning. It's a wonder that anyone gets to work on time with him just kind of diving out of the way with his machine gun.
Yeah.
Not a machine gun.
I bust into Pat, my roommate and former co-host's room every morning screaming, "Say hello to my little friend." Alarm clock in his head, so
just like in the movie.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, let's go to Eli. What have you been consuming recently?
I was listening actually to your guys's podcast that we're—
oh, that's all you need to say. Thank you.
Yes. And Ben turned off the Monopoly documentary, which I'm assuming you watched on Netflix.
Yes,
as did I, and I got through the whole thing.
Okay, what did you think about it?
You know how you wanted just like kind of the history of it?
Mm-hmm.
It definitely goes through the history of the game. And like it goes through like, because like everything else, yeah, for a really long time, it just interviews all these random people you don't really care about. And it's just these weird Monopoly people. And you're like, this is not that interesting. And I definitely had the urge to like just switch it off, especially when they show the same graphic, this like 3D graphic they created of just Monopoly pieces rotating around. I definitely wanted to just hit stop, but there's some interesting history and that takes about 5 minutes. So YouTube that. Don't watch the rest of that documentary.
Okay. So you're saying don't review a movie until you've watched the entire movie. Is that what you're saying?
Just find that part about, because it, like the history of the Monopoly is, it's really interesting. Like the way they go through it, like how it just, it essentially went like within 30 years. It took 30 years to get to the guy who finally like aesthetically changed it to the Monopoly we know.
Okay.
And then it was originally created as it had the opposite like intention. It was supposed to be like capitalism is bad and like it's the most like, fun thing. Yeah.
Yeah, like a criticism or something.
Yeah, like a political.
Huh. Interesting.
Kind of thing. Yeah. So.
Okay. Yeah, it's funny because we actually got an email about this from Panther Joe, who Tyler was telling me last week when we were talking about this movie. That Joe actually watched it and enjoyed it or whatever. So he left a comment on episode 98 when we talked about Conan the Barbarian 2011. And he says, about the Monopoly movie, all those things you mentioned you wish you saw, they covered later on. The only thing I can't vouch for is the celebs. While it was a bit scattered, the story came together nicely, giving us a history lesson while following the people through the tournament. Check it out. So thanks for the email there, Joe. I'm reading that out of order, but I figure since we're talking about it, might as well bring it up. So cool. All right. Well, yeah, I don't know. I think Eli, you bring up a good point. I'll probably just check out the YouTube clip and not have to suffer through the rest of the entirety of that documentary.
And that was just an easy check for Zachary Levi. Oh, my gosh. He just, like, there's a lot of things he's like in there like very peppered throughout that he has to actually like narrate stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else you've been checking out?
Talking about concerts, I went to an instrumental metal show.
What?
I don't recommend it.
Wait, using metal instruments or like strings? Like violins?
No, like the music genre metal.
Like, but it's all instrumental.
It was just a bunch of dudes. It's all like most of the bands are instrumental.
Right.
And actually, there was one band that was good, and it was the only band that used 6 strings instead of like 17-string guitars and had crazy metal. And like they were like the youngest kids of that group, and they just blew away everyone out of the water. Okay. Ghost of Glacier is their name. So that was the one saving grace of that show.
All right.
Does Glacier have any relation to Ice House? heavy metal band.
I don't think so. No, I don't think so.
Okay. But it might have been like an offshoot or a spin-off.
Spawn of Ice House.
Like someone left Ice House and said Glacier.
All right.
Or is it Firehouse? Firehouse is a band,
Is a band, yeah.
I think Ice House might be one, too.
Okay. It's a beer, I think, right?
I don't know. That might be what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway.
Should be a band.
Anything else, Eli?
I think that's it.
Okay. All right. How about you, Free? What have you been checking out?
I really love the Olympics, but I'm a cable cutter. So all I've got is Hulu Plus and I've got Netflix. So watching the Olympics is a really hard thing. So I've done this thing where I spoof my IP address so that I can watch BBC coverage.
Okay.
So I'm watching BBC stuff on my TV in the morning because of the time difference. And it's really, really weird because it's obviously all slanted towards British athletes and interviews and stuff. But they did have this one like sizzle reel like, well, obviously there's one country who's in the lead. And it was like, this sizzle reel of just America and all our gold medals with like, you know, Jimi Hendrix playing the, you know, the national anthem. And we're just like, you know, we look like badasses. Yeah. Like, I was like, that's cool. But I just remember like watching the Olympics and it was like day 3 until they got like their first medal period.
The British?
Yeah. Yeah.
And we beat them like a drum, didn't we, Free?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, right now they're celebrating, you know, having someone with 7 medals in his entire Olympic career. And I think they have one person who's got like 5. And then, of course, they go to like Michael Phelps and it's like he's pursuing his 19th medal. And you're just like, That's right. But one thing I will say is the I love all the uniforms for the British teams. Their uniforms look awesome.
Okay. They got style. They got style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Little known fact, Jason Statham was actually an Olympic diver for the British back before he was discovered by Guy Ritchie. So there's that.
I don't think I know he was a competitive diver. I don't know if he was ever in an Olympic diver, but he was on like a British team. Like he was on their national team, but not ever in an Olympics.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Well, yes.
Professional. You got it right.
Professional.
He was professional level diver. Yes. Yeah.
Free is how you're watching the Olympics. Is that legal? Because if it's not, maybe you should go by Mazer again.
I'm no idea.
Let's not address that question now. I don't think that's pertinent to the court.
I don't think objection, Your Honor. We've been hearing a lot of like terrible stuff about NBC's coverage of the Olympics, like how everything's tape delayed and they've just been making all these ridiculous blunders, like showing montages of like people who've won before those events have actually aired for American audiences and stuff. So I feel like you're probably onto something covering or watching it through the BBC. But
well, the great thing about the BBC stuff is you can watch it A, live. And then B, you can like watch all the events just the same as the NBC stuff, but you don't need to have quote a cable account. So
then you can watch an episode of Top Gear when it's all over, right?
Yeah. Plus no commercials. Zero.
What?
Zero commercials.
How do they do that? The best.
BBC is it's funded by the government.
The
so
state.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. That is awesome.
So you don't have to see any like Wreck-It Ralph promos or anything like that?
No, not one single. I haven't seen a single commercial. Which is
Speaking of Wreck-It Ralph,
that's pretty awesome. Well, yeah, good transition there.
Anything else you watching, Free?
Segue.
No, I mean I watched some stuff later. I mean today, just to get the taste of these two movies we're about to review out of my mouth. So.
Oh, brilliant. All right. Well, Chaser. Yeah, but before we jump into that, I'll just I'll talk a little bit about some stuff that I've seen. Eli and I and Tyler too actually had a chance to go to the Walt Disney Animation Studio recently and went on like an early press event, press junket for Wreck-It Ralph. And we all had a good time, learned a lot about the movie, and it was really cool to see just like the different elements. It was a lot more in depth than like a normal press junket. I wrote up a piece about it at firstshowing.net, so you guys can read that there. And Eli and I recorded a video blog at Geek Tyrant that you guys can see.
We'll include that in the notes.
Yeah, we'll throw those in the show
notes.
Nice
job, Eli.
So
and Ben P.
But yeah, I just wanted to mention that and kind of give an early shout out to Wreck-It Ralph because I think that movie is going to be a lot of fun. It comes out in November. So there's that. I just want to touch on that briefly. And then also, Tyler and I had a chance to see a press screening of Total Recall last night, the 2012 remake.
See what the party.
Of the 1990 Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. And we walked out of the theater and I told Tyler, don't tell me anything about what you think about this movie. I want to save our reactions for the podcast. So,
and then I told you everything in the car.
You told me a couple things, even though, you know, explicitly disobeying my request. But, so I want to throw it to you
first.
Don't
tread on me.
I want to throw it to you first. What did you think about Total Recall 2012?
Total Recall. I haven't seen the old one in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember it taking place on Mars.
Yep.
And I also remember it starring Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yes.
None of that happened to this movie.
Nope.
Stars, you know, CF, our good friend CF. Not Central Florida, but Colin Farrell.
Yeah.
And I thought it was pretty interesting as far as what they were trying to do. Plenty of action. I mean, there were a couple just kind of, let's catch our breath. But then it started right back up again, so you can't really fault it for that. Graphics looked really nice. We saw a 2D version, I believe.
Mm-hmm. I think it's only in 2D.
Oh, okay. Saw a 2D version, which it's in production to be.
Exclusively 2D.
Exclusively 2D film. Although it really should be in 3D. I mean, considering what went into that, like the stuff that was flying around, really should have been in 3D. Now that I think about it, let's delay this a year and make it 3D. How's that sound?
I despise this movie.
What?
Yeah, I really did not like it at all. The 1990 version is a little goofy sometimes because most Schwarzenegger movies are just kind of goofy by nature. Like
hold your tongue.
No, I mean, Sultan. You know, they're pleasant, but they're kind of goofy. Like, he makes ridiculous one-liners and stuff. That's kind of what he does. Like, I feel like every Schwarzenegger movie has to kowtow to him as a force of nature that, like, he just does these things. I mean, look at Batman and Robin for an example. Like, the dude loves one-liners and...
Top billing? You got an argument with that?
I'm just saying. So, anyway, point being... Total Recall 2012, I felt like, was totally derivative, and it took away all of the entertaining, like, intelligence of the 1990 version. Like, the 90 version was goofy at points, but it also got into these really interesting things of, like, is this real? What is real? What is happening? And all of that kind of mystery, like, subtext is taken away in this first movie by the opening scene, which it just, like, tells you straight up which side of the coin it's coming down on, which takes away all of the drama, all of the kind of interesting elements of this story, because the whole thing is about he goes to recall, and at that point it's like, is he, like, there's an accident that happens, and then you're supposed to, if the movie works correctly, wonder from that point forward, is this all a simulation memory implanted by recall, or is this all actually really happening?
I've got that figured out, though.
Been... Right, and that's what I'm
saying.
I'm
going to let everybody else figure it out. I'm not going to say where I figured it out at.
Right, no, that's fine. But, I mean, this movie answers that question definitively and doesn't give you the fun of trying to figure it out on your own, I think. Also, the action you mentioned.
Yeah, it's no Inception.
There is a ton of action in it, but all of it was super boring. And
what?
Just, yeah, like...
I was pretty taken away with
it. I didn't care at all about anything that was happening.
Architecturally, it was really cool too, just kind of the buildings.
The world
stuff.
Building, I will yeah. give it, is like the you one thing that building. I actually enjoyed about it, because they split in this movie. There are basically like two colonies and or two like mega cities on Earth, and because all of those people on the entire planet have moved into two cities, everything is built vertically on top of each other. So there's, you know, it's like a Fifth Element a little bit. And I was talking about that when we talked about Fifth Element recently on, like, one of the episodes in the 90s, 7, 6, whatever.
And it also, the movie was made in the 90s, so that's...
Right.
Apropos.
But, you know, it's like, it's a really interesting-looking place, and, yeah, Colin Farrell was fine, Kate Beckinsale and Jessica Biel were good, Bryan Cranston was good as, like, a, you know, kind of a scenery-chewing villain, but ultimately, like... all of the intelligence is gone. Len Wiseman, the director who did Live Free or Die Hard, it was just like completely soulless behind the camera. There's nothing there. It's like looking at Audrina Patridge. You're just dead behind the eyes. There's just nothing going
Slam!
On.
So get ready for the jam.
Yeah. So I don't know. I despise this movie. I would say no one should ever see it.
What?
I would say
Wow. Watch
the 1990.
It's a good action movie.
Again.
Go check it out.
I don't think it's a popcorn.
It's a popcorn action movie.
But I don't think it's a good action movie. Like,
it's all right.
Because for good,
it's a Total
action,
Recall remake. What do you expect?
That's what I'm saying. It shouldn't have been. I should also point out that I was going into this with a completely open mind. A lot of people, as soon as they found out, like, oh, Total Recall is being made, F this movie. I don't care. And I was one of the few people like, I'm willing to give this a shot.
Although when the original film's logo came on the screen, you and a couple other people were like, bah!
Yeah, there's a company called Original Films that produced this movie, so their little logo shows up at the beginning, and it's like, oh, man.
And then Total Recall shows up.
Choke on the irony right there. But, yeah, I would, I mean, Tyler calls it a good action movie. I'd say the action, oh, my God, you would see it again?
On theater.
Wow, I would say the...
In 3D.
Action,
in 3D, even though it's not in 3D, I'll just put those glasses on.
The action means nothing when you don't care about the characters or anything, the story that's going on. So
you know
I
do care about?
What?
Jessica Biel's bottom in this movie.
Wow, okay, all right, well... On a very superficial level, I'll agree with you, and that's about it. So, all right, with that, I think that's a good point for us to jump into our reviews of Kazam and Steel. Guys, let's talk about Kazam first.
Who dare to wake me? Ain't gonna make this a mystery. Don't wanna do time on your wishes three. Watch it, boy. You don't want to diss me, or I'll dish out my misery. Now, who's that sorry wannabe that disturbed my seas?
Here!
If you want to be number one, I'm sorry, boy, that's been done. But if you got the itches for a sack of riches, don't matter how avaricious, I'm the man that can grant your wishes. Hey, don't turn your butt on me. I'm the man of the ages. Straight out the pages. Hang on, I'm contagious. Outrageous. Spontaneous. You can't contain this. I am Kazam.
All right, so Kazam came out in 1996. This movie was directed by Paul M. Glazer, and it stars, of course, Shaquille O'Neal as a rapping genie named Kazam.
Shaq!
It also stars Francis Capra as Max, the main character, and this is the guy that played Weevil on Veronica Mars, which is kind of an interesting little fact. He's way young in this movie.
Wasn't that show canceled?
It was canceled, yeah.
Okay.
Why were we still like sadly, three sadly.
Or something. Free, I know you specifically, like, when we first started this podcast, which was like 2 years ago, over 2 years ago now, we said that we've always wanted to do a double feature of Kazam and Steel. First of all, I am regretting that decision. And second of all, I think you showed early interest in being a guest on that when we had our first discussion, the kernels of discussions about that. And so now I have to ask you, are you regretting the decision to be a guest on this particular episode?
No, not exactly. I mean, anytime I can study the acting career of Shaquille O'Neal, I mean, I've written a few papers on it, right. And it gives me the opportunity to pull that out and, you know, break down into detail.
You mean exactly one?
Yes. Nice. Yes. Yes.
I'm slow clapping you right now.
So, Free, what did you think about Kazam specifically?
You know what? Watching it recently, this most recent time, I was pretty stinking bored. I gotta say. And it was just so bad. And, like, the whole movie pretty much rests on the Max character.
Mm-hmm.
And Shaq is, like, he's, like, barely... I mean, he's there, but... Not really. He's barely there. He probably only was on like set for maybe like 2 weeks or something like that to shoot his little parts or something. But it's interesting because like he was actually in a movie where he's good, and maybe that's why they put him in, and because he was famous. It was Blue Chips.
Right? I never saw that.
Charles Barkley has said that that's Shaq's best film.
Yeah, it's probably it is, and it's. I don't know. I feel like the thing is aged terribly. All the references and jokes and everything are just so bad.
Yep.
Like rap, you're just like, when he starts rapping, I'm just like, oh, that's the way they rapped in 1996. So, yeah.
That is not how they rapped in 1996, by the way. Tupac and Dre, like there's good rappers around. Just side note.
Yeah.
But yeah. Shaq's not dead.
Eli, what about you? What'd you think?
I'm just going to kind of echo what everyone's kind of saying, how this sounded like an awesome idea. Like when I heard let's watch Kazam and Steel back to back to back, it sounded like the most fun idea because it's because you remember it being so bad that it's bound to be funny.
Right.
You know? Like maybe I don't know, 10 minutes in, I realized not that funny. Especially when I'm watching it alone. Just kind of like, it's just really lonely watching Shaq on screen.
Yeah.
And actually, you know what? The first 5 minutes of Kazam, it feels like there's going to be an actual story about this kid. And that's kind of exciting. And you kind of feel like this, I could watch this. But the second Shaq comes out of that old boombox, it's just over. There is nothing that can save this movie, and especially when rap doesn't rhyme, it's extra bad.
It doesn't even have rhythm. He just says things. Like he says them in no particular rhythm or pentameter, whatever the poetic terms are I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Like it's just him saying things and then landing on the word that's supposed to rhyme with the next one.
I wish he just said it. He yells it. That whole, like, the first 20 minutes he's on screen, he's just yelling.
Yes.
Yelling really random
Maybe
stuff.
Maybe I had problems with the microphones that day.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's also, like, no real consistency to his powers and abilities. Like, why is he, like, not able to do things? He's a genie, for God's sake. Why is he not able to pull off wishes instantaneously? That's his singular purpose in life. When he comes out and Max asks him for, like, a jaguar or something, he, like, just sputters. Yeah, he's just been, like, sitting in this lamp, which, by the way, is what, in some sort of apartment building in New York City that's been being demolished or something.
And from the very beginning of the credits, we see a different lamp shaking with him screaming, and then he comes out of a boombox.
Like, where does he come? What is his origin? I don't know. It's really never.
Well, I think they're like transcendental beings from my study of 1001 Arabian Nights.
Yeah,
like they're just around.
Okay,
but they're tied to their lamps.
Yeah, but I feel like he's in one lamp, and that lamp was just sitting on a shelf in a New York apartment, like for how long?
Not the boombox.
Nobody knows. Yeah, and then they wreck the place, and then he gets transferred into the boombox, and that's when Max pulls him out. But anyway, this is all like completely.
My theory is that they originally started with that lamp, and then they were like, "Oh, we should have him come out of a boombox." But then they're like, "Oh shit, we already wrecked the building. We can't refilm that, so just stick with the original lamp."
Yeah, we put up a picture of Kazam on the Not Just New Movies podcast Facebook page, and Joseph Chase, a fan of the show, said, apparently you guys hate yourselves, and I liked that, ironically, because I was like, oh man, that's pretty funny, but as I was watching it, I was like, my God, Joseph Chase was right, like, what have we done, what hath we wrought on ourselves? I don't know, I mean, I thought this movie was god awful. I think there are a lot of really terrible movies that we've watched in the history of this podcast, because we're at episode 99, by the way. We're coming up on 100.
What?
Yeah, this is episode 99 of this podcast. Coming up on 100, I would put Kazam specifically in the top 6 worst movies that we've watched on this podcast.
I dig that list, Ben.
All right, I like it. You always do have an appreciation for my ridiculous lists. So,
Reyes Brothers, tell us more about how you felt about Kazam.
Yes.
Eli.
Okay, you guys are breaking up again, but I'm assuming that's supposed to be me.
Eli,
yes it is.
Eli Roth.
Okay. Should I snap us in?
No, you can go.
Okay. What was the question?
Just, you know. All right. So now
more thoughts on
that? Keep that in.
No, hang on. All right. You can just, like, anything. He just said, tell us more about what you think, Eli. Go ahead. So here we go.
Tell us more of what we thought of. It's getting bad.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's just, you know, anything, any thoughts that you have, Eli, about Kazam specifically that we haven't mentioned yet.
Okay. Yeah, for Kazam, there's just so many freaking Shaq references to him being what he is off screen, which is a basketball player, and also in Steel as well. I mean, we'll get into that later, but we get it. He's a basketball player when he's not a quote unquote actor.
Right.
You don't have to put that fact into every. Of the two movies he's in.
Yeah, it's like he was scared. Himself. He was scared that people would forget what he was, even though he's like a 7'5" or whatever.
And in one of the films, he's portrayed as not that really good of a basketball player.
Yeah, like, but it's like you don't put like Andre Benjamin into a movie and it's like, hey, just so people remember,
right.
Can you sing Hey Ya for just for 3 of the scenes of the movie? If you could just sing Hey Ya. Over and over again, maybe just shake some Polaroid pictures, maybe off to the side when you're in the background.
Physically shake Polaroid pictures on the side. Yeah. That would be great.
If you could do that, that would be great. Just to remind everyone.
Yeah. And then also, like, DeBrat is a big part of this movie. Apparently there's a master recording tape that's worth $1 million of a DeBrat show. It's like, what world is this?
Who's writing the check for $1 million on DeBrat?
Yeah, seriously. Like, I don't even think she was that big in 1996. Like, I can understand
she
was
an artist.
Oh, yeah. She was legit. I mean, kind of legitimate. I remember her having albums and stuff, but that's what I'm saying.
She existed.
Yeah, like you could get like Whitney Houston or somebody massive, some like megastar or something, and then maybe it would be believable that a master tape would be worth $1 million.
You know what,
like,
Ben? I hear she wants to dance with somebody.
God help us all. All right, let's throw it to you. What have anything that stuck out to you in Kazam that we haven't mentioned yet?
Yeah, I love that this kid is willing to let some weird black guy stalk him until he has abilities. Product placement's big in this movie.
Yeah.
I think they were kind of inspired by the genie from Aladdin, so they tried to turn him a little bit into a cartoon character. It didn't really work.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite line of the whole movie is, you smell like hippopotamus butt.
I liked Pizza Guy's here to bust the tedium. That was one of Shaq's god-awful rhymes. The hippopotamus one was
that's
good
how we
too.
Talked in the 90s, though. Hippopotamus butt was, like, hilarious.
Yeah. That rap battle between him and the kid, that was... I love that he slam dunks the villain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God. That was...
Reminder...
Yeah, exactly. Another reminder. I think that was my favorite part in the movie, when he balls a human being up into a ball, dribbles him multiple times, and then throws him into some sort of ventilation shaft. And we're talking about this, like, as we were watching it, we're like, what happened to him? Is he dead? Is he just sitting down there in basketball form, like, forever? What right. is going on? That was
an eternal punishment.
Yeah. That was fantastic. And I think that guy played, what is his name? Ranjit. From How I Met Your Mother. Yeah. So that's kind of an interesting
He's gone on to
cameo.
Better fame.
Better things.
As a subplot in a popular sitcom.
Oh my God. I just realized I wrote down in my notes another Shaq line that I think is better than the tedium one. And it says, nothing is more amasia than my studies in Asia. that's not even a word. What the hell are these writers thinking?
Well, it's crazy how, like, even how Kazam fulfills these wishes is terrible. Like, the Max kid's like, I wish I had junk food from here to the sky. He's like, yeah. Why not? Higher than high. And then it goes, like, maybe past their hip.
Yeah, and it's like, he also, like, Kazam seems to do whatever he wants, not whatever Max wants. Like, most genies are pretty enslaved to the wishes of their masters, and I feel like Max makes at least 5 or 6 wishes in this movie that go unanswered just because Shaq is like, no, I don't think I'm going to do that. I don't think you really mean that. It's like, bitch, you're my genie. Do what I tell you to do.
Bitch, you're my genie. Tagline.
That's what it should have been.
Kazam, bitch, you're my genie. Scooter in the butt.
Yeah, I don't know. There's the candy and junk food scene was pretty uninspired.
Then, and Ben, I fell asleep multiple times during this film while watching it with you. But his second wish was for the master tape.
Yeah.
And then the third wish was for...
I think for
immortality?
A second chance or something, you know. For
yeah.
Endless
for his dad.
No, just...
Infinite wishes.
Something lame. Something way
what
lamer.
Was it?
It was for, like, a second chance. It was for, like... Oh, that's right. It was for... Essentially for Kazam to turn into a djinn, which is... you know,
can grant ethereal wishes according to the Wikipedia page.
Right, yeah, it's like a competing entity with genies, but they're really not that different. And in this movie, they make them out to be really totally different. I don't know.
Right. So now he can grant like love wishes, which according to Bruce Almighty, Ben, and this is precedent.
Yeah,
even God can't make someone love somebody. So the ethereal wishes just goes out the window.
Yeah,
at this
so
point.
The entire concept of a djinn is really...
We need a Supreme Court of movies around here.
I love
here
how we're talking about the what a djinn can and cannot do
right.
in this movie.
You want to check out a good djinn computer game, Ben?
No,
Quest for Glory 2.
I don't.
Sierra, 1991.
Okay.
Preceding Kazam. Check it out.
All right, yeah.
Quest for Glory 2.
So I think we're coming to a close on our Kazam conversation. There's not really much more we can do except just like pick out scenes and nitpick them and be like, how ridiculous is this? I do want to say as just like a piece of broad stroke before we move on, Max's dad, kind of a dick in this movie.
Yeah.
Who wants to hang out with that guy?
Yeah, and I don't know, like Eli, you're talking about in the first few minutes, yeah, I mean, it kind of sets up this relationship story and You've got the whole subplot of Travis coming in, who happens to be a firefighter, of course, who saves Max, of course, from the building when it catches on fire at the end, of course.
Yeah, there were a lot of themes in the 90s about kids and, like, their separated parents.
Yeah, you know, like Man of the House with Jonathan Taylor Thomas and stuff. Yeah,
there, Jungle to Jungle.
Right, yeah.
I think it had something to do with it.
There's a lot of those. But
And those always make me feel good for some reason, and Kazam just didn't achieve it. Although, I don't really have fond memories from watching this movie. I did watch this movie back in the 90s, but it does remind you of what the 90s were like. Not a great place, not a great decade. However, I feel at home there for some weird reason.
Okay.
So, I mean, I didn't get any enjoyment out of this movie, but it did. It was like a comfort movie. Like, you have comfort food.
Mm-hmm.
You have, like, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, the movie. It's terrible.
Yeah.
But I love watching it.
It's like comfort food, but it makes you vomit afterwards.
Or explosive diarrhea.
Right.
ED afterwards.
Yeah.
I don't want to bum everybody out, but like along with that storyline of him growing up not knowing his father, Frank Capra, the actor who played Max, he like grew up not knowing his father.
Oh wow!
And when his father was finally released out of jail, he was shot to death.
Oh God!
Wait, his dad or Francis Capra?
The father of
dad was shot to death. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was a situation where, hey, your dad's out of jail, kid, and then he got shot to death.
No.
So if there's anything that is worse than this movie is the fact that it somewhat reflects that real life serious situation.
Well, if you're tempted to watch it, just know that this has a 4% on Rotten Tomatoes.
So. Yeah, and also this movie is 93 minutes long, which I thought was staggering when I found that out, because it feels like it's 2.5 hours. The pacing is some of the worst
that
I can
see.
That's
why I had to take
a nap. Yeah, you fell asleep multiple times in this, and I was forced to just stay there. It was like a scene out of Clockwork Orange where my eyes were peeled to the screen. I was like, when will this end? Ouch. This is god-awful. All right, so that pretty much wraps up our discussion on Kazam. Thoughts. So let's go ahead and move into our little analysis of Steel.
The weapons of tomorrow on the streets today. One man must stand up for justice.
We make our own kind of weapons to take out the ones in the streets.
To stop an enemy without hurting them.
With a heart of gold, a will of iron.
This hammer time.
And a body of steel.
Where'd he go?
The Batcave?
Shaquille O'Neal, Steel.
All right, so Steel came out 1 year later, 1997. This movie was directed by Kenneth Johnson, written and directed by Kenneth Johnson.
I love that.
There's
I love that combo.
Kill his career as a writer and a director. Two birds, one stone.
I am going to say, just starting off here, I liked this movie a lot more than Kazam. I mean, that's kind of I feel like that's a given. I hope everyone feels the same way. Otherwise,
isn't it weird that Kazam's the worst of the two, even though Steel is unavailable on most mediums?
That's true. We literally had to watch Steel through YouTube, a YouTube playlist, because it is unavailable on DVD, let alone Netflix streaming. So, Tyler, you're I would say, a Superman scholar as far as comics goes among this group.
Self-appointed.
Self-appointed, right? I don't want to make people think
I show up to most conventions hoping for a room, but never get one.
I don't want to make people think that you're some sort of, like, you know, legitimate, like, academia, you know, Superman person. But anyway.
Although, like Free, I have published a few papers on Superman.
All right. So why don't you tell us a little bit about, like, the comic history behind the character of Steel, and then we'll kind of keep that in the background of our discussion of the movie as we go forward.
Very good. Very good question. So Superman died sometime in comics by the one super punch of Doomsday, and a lot of people were ragging on that recently on Geek Tyrant. Venkman claimed he stopped reading Superman comics after reading The Death of Superman. I was kind of appalled because that storyline actually got me into comic books. I started reading them when I bought The Death of Superman and The Return of Superman, which features four different Supermen, because they had four Superman titles out at the time. So after Superman died, there were like four doppelgangers who showed up, and one of them happened to be John Henry Irons, an African-American gentleman lived in Metropolis who had been saved by Superman as part of his backstory. And he, he steeled up some armor and slapped it on, became like the sledgehammer-wielding a superhero we know of today.
Yeah,
and they made a movie about it.
And there were a few people that were kind of trying to take up the mantle of Superman in his absence. Yes. when he was dead in the comics, and correct. Steel was one of
and
those people.
And everyone thought one of the four was the real Superman, but as it turned out, none of them were.
Right. And then, of course, Superman is resurrected in the comics, and basically these characters become like side people again.
Yeah, the Eradicator dies, Cyborg Superman lives on through computers, Superboy dies but then comes back to life, right. And Steel has existed since.
Okay. All right, so with all of that in mind as a very elaborate backstory, what did you guys think, Reyes Brothers, of Steel? Free, let's start with you.
Sparky! I don't...
finger E.T. No. style through the computer.
No. I think it's funny that, A, in this movie, Shaq still can't shoot.
Yeah.
And... I just had to do some research on this film just to see what was up with it, because after watching it, I was like, when I first watched this, I didn't watch it in theaters. I watched this, no joke, probably in a format you've never heard of. It was called VCD,
wow,
which is video on CDs,
huh.
And it was two CDs. Anyway.
Double disc.
Yeah, double disc.
Steel, check it out.
I read it up, and the movie was apparently like shot in like 5 weeks.
Okay.
Wow. I guess it's kind of telling because between the Lakers and the 96 Olympics, that's the only time he had. No joke. Wow.
That's coming up against Rocky, which was filmed in like 28 days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except the Oscar went the other way.
Yeah. So because they only had this short amount of time, like, for the quote, the central character, he's not really, doesn't have as much screen time as you would expect him to have. The Sparky character is on screen for a lot of amount of time. Mm-hmm. Judd Nelson, the villain character, is on screen for a lot of time. And I was also reminded that people used to say whack. So.
Yep.
Yeah. Still do.
As far as like a movie that's representative of the 90s, I feel like this one, I don't know if you want to call it like more relatable or something, but it's like maybe just, first of all, it's a better movie.
It's a little toned down.
The story itself, like, it actually has a story. It's a stupid story, but it's there. It, you know, it has a beginning, middle, end. It has all the kind of recognizable pieces that you would expect.
He's not a genie in this one.
Right. Shaq is terrible in it. Does anybody expect Shaq to be good in anything? Like, I don't know. He was pretty god-awful. Speaking of comics and stuff and the Sparky character, she's obviously some sort of oracle, kind of like
a
riff on that, which in the comic books, Barbara Gordon, Commissioner Gordon's daughter, becomes
Flashback Girl,
handicapped, and runs like the tech for Batman from this ivory tower in Gotham City, and she's, you know, wheelchair bound, but is like, you know, gifted in all these other technological ways, and that's clearly what they're trying to do with Sparky here. I don't know about you guys. Well, before we get into this, Eli, what did you think?
First of all, I don't know if there was some kind of rights issue with them, like, not using the Superman S, basing it not in Metropolis but in Los Angeles, which is really weird because there's certain scenes I'm like, that's where I used to walk home from school. It's really weird. But, like, yeah. Does anyone know if there was kind of some kind of reason there wasn't, like, those iconic Superman, like, backgrounds and
that's actually what I was getting ready to say. So I'm glad you brought that up. Is I really wish that this movie incorporated those Superman elements into it, because I feel like it would have been a lot more entertaining if, you know, it with just a little thing like him actually having the S on his chest, or even like being saved by Superman, like you said, you know, that part of his backstory, even right. If we only see Superman briefly, or don't even, you wouldn't even have to see him, just have him be
mention
referenced
it
in that,
yeah,
world or something, you know, that would be enough, like something that would tie this movie to the Superman mythos. But there's really nothing here. And I feel like if they would have taken a page out of the comic books and made this one of those kinds of stories, it would have been a lot better as a movie. But yeah, I don't know. Any other
and
thoughts?
Considering the time period, I think Steel's height was in like 93, and this movie came out in 97. So probably only diehard comic book fans knew of its existence, but probably weren't checking out to see it.
Yeah,
it'd be like the Daredevil of the 90s past decade.
And plus it stars Shaquille O'Neal, so like how many, you know, automatically this movie is not going to be taken seriously. I mean, this was way before the comic book movie boom, that was kind of started Spider-Man and X-Men and stuff. So it's not even really a comic book movie. It's just like, it's a like a low budget kind of, it looks like a CW TV show basically. Like the effects and stuff are terrible. People are shooting laser guns everywhere. They have like pulse guns that kind of knock over things and shoot these like beams of sound around and stuff. The technology is really strange in here. And one of the big things about this movie is John Henry Irons, this character, is named after the mythical John Henry Irons, the folklorish John Henry Irons, who would hammer steel pegs into a railroad. And Steel, the character, is supposed to have this hammer as this kind of iconic weapon. But I don't know if you guys noticed this. I don't think, maybe at all in the entire movie, did Shaq ever actually swing the hammer and use it properly. There were like guns embedded into it and all kinds of weird stuff.
Yeah, he defends himself from an attack of a 2x4 and breaks the 2x4. That's the only time he actually wields the hammer as a hammer kind of thing. One moment in a movie.
It's like Superman Returns where he doesn't throw a punch.
Yeah, basically.
Eli, thoughts?
Yeah, would you...
As far as like any good movie, good versus evil, a lot of it's going to hinge on how good your villain is. And Judd Nelson as the villain was just so over the top from the get go, like as a in the army or in the military, and it's just you don't buy it for a second because it's Judd Nelson. And it's just, you're just like, oh my, what am I watching here? And it's so like, he brings it back like 20 years, but like 10 years from that time. It seems like back to a really low budget 80s movie.
Yeah.
Just because of how bad he is as a villain.
Yeah, he seems like he belonged in like a Rutger Hauer movie or something instead of this. Like he really like this. Yeah, like you said, the second you see him on screen, he's dressed in the same kind of military garb that Shaq is, but he just has this really like bizarre, creepy look in his eye, and you know instantaneously he's the villain. Something's gonna go down. Which, by the way, that opening scene was so stupid because. He tells like this government lady like, oh, I've made some special adjustments to this gun, and it's basically just a knob that he moves up into the red, and it's like anybody would notice that this has been altered or tampered with. What is going on here?
And for some reason, and I know Shaquille O'Neal's a basketball player because I was alive, and I did not believe him as like a weapons expert or like any type of technically advanced individual. And I'm sorry on Shaq's part, but you're basketball, man. You're basketball. You're not astrophysics or anything like this.
Yeah, he's trying to spout techno babble in the beginning about like,
oh yeah, I gotta check the scope.
I mean, he's a funny guy. Like in real life, Shaq is hilarious, and he's got a thing for comedy. Like he's got comedic timing, but these movies do not highlight that at all. They highlight other things that he's not good at.
Yeah, and yet, the scripts are terrible.
Oh yeah, that too.
This had a lot more dramatic scenes that needed him to be able to act, and like that hospital scene when he comes and gets Sparky, you're just like, what am I watching right now?
Yeah.
Did you notice how much acting he did with his eyebrows?
Oh my god,
it was distracting.
It was every other word in a sentence. They would be up and down, and I was like, oh man, what has happened? Is he having a stroke? Like, what's going on? This movie, I think, has like one of the worst train chase sequences I've ever seen, and the trains were all static, so that's saying something too. Like they're just running through.
Does that mean they're moving?
No, they're not moving.
Oh,
they're running through like an abandoned train yard, and it's like the same pieces of action happen over and over again.
I think they might have used the same train.
No, not even the same train, but just like the same footage. Like he'll turn a corner, the guy will barely escape. He'll shoot at him or something, and then like he gets a little further away, and then they just do that for like 10 minutes, and you're like, ugh, well, come on, get to it. What's happening?
And the steel costume, was it free? Or Eli, do you guys
know anything about the Steel comic book character?
Yeah. It just didn't look right at all. Like, it was just really bad. Just the first time you see it, you're just like, oh my goodness. Like, what were they thinking? It looks like, it just didn't look like metal. It just looked like, plasticky, rubbery stuff. Yeah.
And that's supposed to be like the big hero reveal when he's done forging this suit and stuff, and it just looks terrible. And like the mask and stuff too. It's like, also that brings me to another point. I love how he tried to have a secret identity in this movie. Like, he's the only guy in LA that's a huge, maybe what, 300-pound, yeah. 7-foot
Judd Nelson figures out. He's like, I wonder who that is. Like, he's the only 7.5-foot-tall Los Angelian.
Yeah, but there are people like on the news, like, oh, gee, I wonder who it is.
Well, that just takes me to, there's a scene where there's this couple who he helps out when he's first starting out as Steel, right?
Yep.
And they have this whole thing where, like, they don't identify him. It's like, clearly that's him. But that scene where he actually returns their stuff to them,
mm-hmm.
I thought it was hilarious that he, like, gives their stuff to them and then takes the escalator.
Yeah, and he just steps back onto it and rides backwards, keeping eye contact the whole time.
You're like...
the creepiest thing you could do.
Any of the Shaq movement, he's a slow runner. He's a big boy.
Yeah.
And he can't be agile, especially not in that crazy rubber suit he's in. And so when he, like, does, like, that kind of Batman, like, Gatling gun or whatever thing, and he rides up that thing, he's going, like, half a mile per hour. Like, those cops literally could just run up and, like, grab him down like a pinata and just shook him down.
Yeah.
But they just kind of let him go, and he's going up so slow. It's painful to watch.
Yeah, those guys are the worst cops ever, because they completely surround him, and he just, he shoots this tiny little rope up in there, and as soon as he starts rising off the ground, I looked at Tyler, I was like, no. Nope.
Not gonna hold.
Can't do it. Doesn't work. And they're like, you should really check the tensile strength in those, in those ropes.
You need to do that before you go out on the mission.
Yeah.
Which they didn't do. Yeah, the fight scenes were really bad, because I guess we live in this age now where you can use camera angles and it makes even shitty fight scenes look good. They had no idea about that.
Yeah, it was basically just a bunch of guys with Roman candles shooting.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The guns look like Roman candles.
Pew, pew.
Back to just Shaq being Shaq and having to do a free throw to save him and his brother. I didn't realize grenades take 3 minutes to go off after the pin's been pulled and all that,
and that they can bounce around the rim or a chain link fence for as long as that one did. And it's like, that little kid, I'm sure, played basketball, and he knows that Shaq can't do it, so he's like, why wouldn't he just take the shot anyway? Like, I don't know, it's like some sort of, it's supposed to be a redemptive moment for Shaq, and it's like,
he hasn't been practicing basketball this whole time.
Yeah, so why would he?
If this was a basketball movie, it'd totally work.
Yeah.
It's
Dwayne Johnson, if you could just smell what you're cooking real quick, just cook something. If you could smell what Dwayne Johnson is cooking,
that would be great.
I wish there was a movie that featured The Rock Johnson where he couldn't do the people's elbow until the very end. He just kept missing.
There are a lot of, like, Richard Roundtree plays Uncle Joe in this movie. There are a lot of god-awful references. Not only to Shaq, but also to Shaft. And at one point like, they're talking about the hammer or whatever, and he's like, I especially like the shaft, and basically, like, looks at the camera and winks. It's like,
which, if you didn't know that actor was Shaft, you would think it was some weird sex joke.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
I took it as a sex joke, actually.
Even knowing that he was Shaft.
Right.
Did you guys notice that John Hawks plays one of the robbers that Steel takes down? Like, I think it's the first guy.
Yeah, first guy
that Steel kind of encounters. I was like, John Hawks. Wow, this guy has gone on to be. That's probably something that not a lot of people know. I mean, Ray J is in this movie too, but nobody cares about him.
You know
anymore.
What he went on to do?
But
showcase his Shaft.
Oh, ba-doom-ba. Kim Kardashian sex tape. High five. Anyway,
no, nobody.
Hey, did you guys watch the music video?
There's a music video?
Yeah, it's called Men of Steel, and it's Shaq rapping with, I think it's, oh, shoot.
Is it Ray J?
Skype that to us immediately.
Yeah.
That's the closing music.
It's pretty stinking bad.
Ugh.
That means I'm going on my iPod.
Yeah, Men of Steel.
Yeah, I'm gonna YouTube that immediately. Tyler, you mentioned while we were watching it that a couple of the characters, like Burke is the bad guy played by Judd Nelson, and a couple of his lackeys hang out in like a pretty typical 90s hangout, kind of reminiscent of...
Ninja Turtles, the Foot Clan hideout for the kids.
Yeah, and like the Double Dragon one.
Yep, that one too.
It's just like an abandoned place.
That's why the 90s were so sweet, because kids were just into like smoking, arcade machines, skateboarding. I think it was a West Coast thing, but I mean, I remember in Midwest area, like wanting to be into that, and you know, I had a skateboard, I think, but I didn't skateboard everywhere because the roads are all gravel.
Yeah, it's all, you kinda know, it's, sucked. It's just like this grandeur of the city, you know, like the
every
city
kid,
life.
At least I wanted to go and escape and be there.
Yeah.
Even as
and,
a bad guy.
And Max in Kazam also, like, managed to break into some sort of abandoned building, and he had, like, his cool little setup or whatever in there. And these guys, Burke's henchmen, are like, they're wearing eye patches and leather trench coats and playing pool. First of all, I think you need two eyes to play pool. Depth perception, anyone? I don't know. It's not to you know.
Maybe he lost the one eye with the pool cue.
Yeah, exactly. Not to slight.
He's never good to begin
any
with.
Any one-eyed pool players who happen to be listening to this podcast, but
Nick Fury's gonna kick your ass.
Yeah, seriously.
He's getting a pool team together.
Yeah, I'm phase two. Trying to see if there's and then also there's like weird lines that Richard Roundtree would deliver, like, well, I'll be dipped in shit and rolled in breadcrumbs. Like, that was actually something that somebody wrote, and he said that. Why? What is that?
Who's writing a check on this?
For real. There's like that whole subplot too with like the grandmother who is trying to get the French restaurant going.
Oh yeah, the souffle keeps failing.
Yeah,
I mean, there were some funny parts in this movie, and I think we laughed more at its atrocious nature than we did at Kazam.
Yeah,
again, absolutely. I fell asleep during Kazam. But yeah, it was actually like, I don't know if you can find it. I don't know if it's, I'm not gonna say it's worth watching, but if you're a film historian, as we are, as we consider ourselves to be, it's worth going back and kind of enjoying at least once.
Yeah, I feel like the grandma should have been played by Grandmama, like Larry Johnson in Family Matters when he like dresses up and plays basketball with Eddie Winslow and stuff. That would have been because that would have made sense, you know, Shaq and Larry Johnson together again. It's like a Space Jam type of thing.
If you watch it on YouTube and you kind of see, like, I think it's in like 11 parts or something,
mm-hmm.
how drastically each part, how much less views each part has. people just drop it off like, no. F this movie.
That's awesome. There was one particular moment near the end of the movie that really stood out to me where it's like the dumbest reverse psychology criminal moment I think that I can remember. It is pure, like the most basic example of reverse psychology when Shaq seems like he's captured by during like the criminal meeting when Judd Nelson is hosting this meeting of all these criminals and getting ready to, you know, show this an example about his weapons or whatever. And Shaq essentially just like falls through a wall into his trap or whatever. And he's just laying there on the ground while the Oracle Sparks is like trapped off to the side. And Judd Nelson picks up Steel's hammer and Shaq's like, don't push that red button. Or don't twist it, just don't do it. And he's like, of course I'm going to do it. And he does it, and it's a magnet, and like everything is fine. But it's like guys, give us some reverse psychology.
It was the
90s, or something.
Man, the simplicity of it was what was winning people over, I guess. Oh,
I can't.
It was pre 9/11.
That has nothing to do with any
absolutely
of this.
Nothing.
No
argument though.
Pre 9/11 solves everything.
9/11.
That explains
the entire 90s decade.
Yeah, there you go.
Thanks a lot, Bin Laden.
Yeah, for real.
Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch. Pre 9/11.
All right. Well, did you guys have anything else that you wanted to mention as far as Steel goes before we wrap this up?
Yeah, I just want to mention how much of a bomb it was, because they spent $16 million to make it, and it only made back like $1.7 million.
Wow.
Where was all that money going? Did it go on trying to make souffles?
It was going into R&D for future CW TV shows and their graphics and
stuff. It did have the Flash TV show from 91. It had that kind of feel to it.
Yeah, but like we were saying, like, this is a movie. This is supposed to be better than a TV show, not like equal to one of the worst live-action superhero shows ever committed to the small screen.
We just reviewed The Solar Sentinel.
I think, like, closing thoughts on both of these movies, I would put Steel way above Kazam. I would watch Steel again in, like, 15 years. I don't think I'll ever watch Kazam again. Tyler, what'd you think? Closing thoughts for both?
Yeah, I agree. I'd buy Steel on DVD if it ever gets approved.
Really? For, like, $5
or
something?
Oh, yeah, no, okay. That's how much it's going to be. So I would buy that, and Kazam, yeah, I mean,
I'd buy that for $1.
RoboCop retweet. Yeah, it's like Kazam. More people are more familiar with Kazam, but I don't think they actually have seen the movie.
They misremember it from their childhood.
Yeah, and you know what? If it's a Kazam Steel double combo DVD, I'll buy it.
Wow.
Won't watch Kazam.
Okay, all right.
Although, 90s nostalgia. That's going to win me over every time.
All right. Eli, what about you? Closing thoughts on both?
Both of these films have got to exist somewhere on Laserdisc, and someone owns both of these films. That person's name, Shaquille O'Neal.
Exactly, yeah.
The only person.
I bet the directors don't even own these movies.
Yeah, they're like, bad ideas, bad. It was the 90s. It was a pre-9/11 world.
Hey, you think Ray J used his time in Steel as the pickup line for Kim Kardashian?
I hope so. He just used the fact that he was an African-American male as a pickup line for Kim Kardashian.
That's all you need. All right, Free, do you think it was worth it, the Kazam and Steel double feature? Give us some closing thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, just because you could say we did it.
Yep.
But no, I was thinking, like,
this isn't Tough Mudder or something. This isn't,
you know, I was thinking, like, how are these things, like, fully online, and, like, why didn't Warner Brothers take these down? It's like, probably because no one cares to take these films down.
Yeah, basically.
It's like
Warner, like, Brothers is like, wait, people are watching this? Sweet.
Yeah. Like, no one cares for the rights for these things. It's like, it's, you know, like, we posted up, I think, a video of Comic-Con of the community panel, and we had like a copyright warning on the audio for the community panel, and you're like, wow, they're on top of the rights. And we get stuff all the time, but like two full movies, and like it's like, I think even one of them had like ads running on them.
Yeah,
like I was like, wow.
Warner Brothers decided to monetize the YouTube videos.
I was like, this is pretty bad. This is pretty bad. I feel like they should, like, at least release it on iTunes or something crazy. Something. Oh, Netflix, like, who cares? Like, I don't know. Maybe they're just trying to bury it.
Yeah.
They're that bad. They're that bad.
Ben, are you making the suggestion that the person who uploaded these films are an actual Warner Brothers associate doing it for the studio with the ads in front?
But I feel like if I worked at Warner Brothers, I'd be like, all right, guys, just let me test this. I'm just going to upload it. Let's just see how many views it gets. And, you know, maybe he made a deal with somebody. Like, if it gets 5,000 views, let's try to put it on a DVD. Right. So, I don't know.
Okay.
There's that. All right, well, man.
That was worth it.
I'm glad that that's recorded for posterity. Okay. Somebody will have the ability to watch this. Anybody searching for a podcast talking about Kazam and Steel, I feel like we've got to be one of the only ones on the internet to do
that.
Or be warned from watching them.
Yeah. All right. Well, Tyler, why don't you rev up the old Apple II and let people know what we're going to be watching next week?
You know what, Ben? I've traveled 3,000 miles with the Apple II on my back, and I think it knows our 100th episode is approaching.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to pull that lever, and I'm going to hope for the best.
All right. Here we go.
Ben, you would not believe this. You are not going to believe what movie this Deus Ex Machina, as it was originally called, but what we call the Apple II now. You don't know what kind of movie it has just chosen.
It's episode 100. It better be good.
It is a movie that we have been referencing, lo, these many years, 2 years. It stars one of my favorite actors of all time. You can find a top 10 list of his movies at notjustnewmovies.com. It also stars
Suspense, it's killing me.
It also stars a actor who portrayed James Bond. It also features a world fighting tournament.
Tell people. Just tell them.
It also features the beginning scene with the key protagonist dressed up as a clown performing on the streets of 1920s New York, I believe.
Or Paris or something.
In The Quest.
The Quest.
All Jean-Claude right. Van Damme in The Quest.
Well,
we are watching it for episode 100. We've sang its praises multiple times.
Yep.
It's going to be the penultimate review,
I think. Yeah, but now we're going to be able to do it in its the full entirety that it actually deserves. So, yes.
I was actually part of a test screening for that film.
No
way. Whoa.
Yeah. They were like, "Do you guys think this is a movie that should be in theaters?" It's like, "No."
Really?
Yeah. Now, I just remember being there with Joey, who's also a Geek Tyrant, and we screened it, and it was like a unanimous, like everyone there was just like, this is a terrible movie.
In 96?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Really?
That's awesome.
Shame on you.
Oh, wait, Quest?
Yeah,
wait.
Quest.
I'm maybe thinking of a different film.
Ooh, all right. Well,
it might have the same Quest? Title. I don't know.
You sure was Quest? You sure it wasn't Kazam in 1996?
What's the name of the movie that he's a Templar? I feel like it's The Quest, but
no, he's not a Templar in this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe that's like Lionheart or something. I don't know.
No, he's not a Templar in that either. Although you need to see Lionheart. That's a good one too. It's not as good as The Quest.
All right. Well, we'll talk about that more next week. So The Quest is available on Netflix. Watch it instantly if you guys want to. Yeah, exactly. If you want to follow along, watch that with us. You can shoot us an email, notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. Let us know what you think about The Quest, Kazam, Steel, or anything that we've talked about in the 99 episodes leading up to
but
this one.
But don't include an email about a bitch.
What?
Because that ain't one.
Oh. Oh, 99 episodes, but a bitch ain't one. Got
exactly.
it. Yeah. Okay. We do have one email that we want to read. From Rocco. Hey guys, Rocco again. I'm starting to give Leo a run for his money, aren't I?
Zing.
It's a reference that only longtime fans of the podcast and Leo himself will understand. I recently watched The Girl Next Door for the first time since it came out. I was in sixth grade or something. That's the one where young Emile Hirsch falls in love with an adult film actress played by Alicia Cuthbert. The movie also features a young Paul Dano and Timothy Olyphant from Justified, who completely steals every scene he's in. The first time I saw this movie, I hated it. However, upon this rewatch, I loved it. What are some movies you guys gave a second chance to, only to find that it was actually better than you thought? Also, are you guys mad at Peter Jackson for deciding to make The Hobbit a trilogy? You don't have to answer this one if you don't want to. Thanks again, Rocco. All right, well, Rocco, thank you very much for the email. Movies that we saw that we hated the first time and then that we liked a lot more on second viewing. I have a couple in mind. Do you guys, Free and Eli, do you want to be thinking about that? Or do you have any off the top of your head that you can...
I'll have to think about that.
Okay.
I'll go.
All right, go ahead, Tyler.
All right. Well, I entered a renaissance in my college years of terrible movies that are good because I enjoy terrible movies. One that I went back and revisited as a child, or I had watched it as a child. I wasn't a child anymore revisiting it, but it was a revisit for adult me. Masters of the Universe, starring Dolph Lundgren and I believe
Courtney
Frank
Cox.
Langella
oh, yeah.
as Skeletor, Courtney Cox also. 1987. Also the principal from Back to the Future is in it. I think that's about it.
Okay.
Other people. You know, not great, but fun to watch and revisiting it. You never think you're gonna enjoy the movies you liked as a kid, but for some reason I'm weird. Never Ending Story Part 2. I never remembered liking, or I always remembered it not being very good. It was actually better than the first one, in my honest opinion.
Mm-hmm.
The world is a lot fuller than in the first Never Ending Story. I have never seen Never Ending Story 3 with Jack Black, who steals the book and releases all of the animals, which is near impossible, according to the Never Ending Story mythos. But, again, Part 2 enjoyable. I think the graphics and the money was a little better that time. So, okay. Yeah, check out those two and come back and see me.
All right. For me, Zoolander is one that comes to mind. I didn't really think it was that funny in theaters. I was like, I don't understand this. Because I feel like that movie, I think it came out in 2001. That was part of the first, like, that was one of the first movies in this new wave of, you know, the Will Ferrell, Ben Stiller comedy that kind
of... They call themselves
the,
something.
Like the Frat Pack.
The Frat
Pack. Yeah.
So it was kind of one of the first of those movies, and you know, this was right after Ferrell left Saturday Night Live, so he hadn't really become like the superstar Will Ferrell yet. Ben Stiller was still kind of like fairly unproven. I think he directed The Cable Guy before.
He was in Something About Mary.
And he was in a couple movies, but he wasn't like a mega star at that point. And I don't know. I mean, I just saw it and I was like, I don't really understand the comedy in this. I didn't really think it was that funny. And then, I don't know, a couple years later, I gave it a rewatch and thought it was hilarious. So that's definitely one that comes to mind. Another one, The Big Lebowski. That's a movie that I just like totally didn't get at all the first time I saw it. And we talked about this on the episode where we spoke with Mystery Team director Dan Ekman when we talked about The Big Lebowski.
Name
on,
drop.
On this this
as
podcast.
As high as the sky.
Only up to the waist. And so,
sorry, Ekman.
Yeah, so... yeah, that was one that I just didn't get, and then I liked it a lot more. You know, the more times I watch it, the more times I like that movie. Those are the only two I can think of off the top of my head. Do you guys have any others? Any from the Reyes brothers?
I think like a lot of comedies kind of have that effect where you just don't really tune into it, or you're so young when you watch the comedy for the first time, you don't really get the jokes. I think like something like older Simpsons episodes or something like that, I didn't really get the humor until I watched them later on.
Mm-hmm.
A movie that kind of happened as far as like not tuning into the humor, when I first watched Nacho Libre in theaters, I didn't really get it. It was like, especially coming off Napoleon Dynamite, I'm like, I got that. I thought that was funny, and I just didn't think Nacho Libre was that funny. But when I started watching it on DVD, I couldn't stop watching it. It was so funny. And I could just quote everything. That's when you start to quote it, that's when it became funny.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a question about Napoleon Dynamite?
Yes.
Did you watch the cartoon show at all?
I watched one episode and I didn't like that first episode.
Really? I really enjoyed the cartoon. I thought it was a good companion piece to the film.
They do a good job of like keeping it in that same. They did a really good job with the characters and the animation looks great. I
really do.
Yeah, I just couldn't get into it.
Gentlemen Broncos. Have you seen that?
I saw that. Yes.
It's also very good. Very Napoleon Dynamite-esque.
I like that. I actually went to like a premiere of that with a bunch of, like with the whole cast there and the director there and
very cool.
Yeah, but that movie got shelved. Like, well, not shelved. Yeah. Like, it was got like a 1 week release and then just got taken off.
Yeah, it's a shame.
Free, how about you? Any films that you didn't care for the first time and then liked it a lot the second time?
The only movie I can think of is Cable Guy.
Mm.
Is because he had Jim Carrey had done Ace Ventura and stuff like that, and
Ask.
Yeah, and like The Cable Guy was such a different film. Like I didn't quite connect with it. And watching it, I still don't love it, mm-hmm. but I like it a little bit more than being totally ambivalent to it. So.
Nice,
Prison Rules, huh?
So I don't know the Peter Jackson Hobbit thing. Like, does anybody have like any real opinions on that? Tyler, sounds like you do.
I'm a huge fan of the Lord of the Rings trilogy, especially Fellowship of the Ring. I think it's like his greatest film. Although I haven't seen King Kong. but yeah, I mean the trilogy itself. I mean I don't think it's a thing to do to make more money off of the franchise at all. But they're talking about how they want to work in a lot of stuff that isn't in The Hobbit, like a lot of his other writings, like pre-death writings that he had that I think Christopher Tolkien, his son, had compiled together in like the Book of Lost Tales and things like this. I think that's pretty cool because you know he's thinking, okay, I'm going to make The Hobbit and then people are going to want to make me want to do this and this. And so I think he's trying to appease all of the larger fans and be like, okay, this is my last Tolkien thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to make it three movies to make everyone happy, which is a great thing to do. But I think it's going to be like his final Tolkien entry because
I can just see, like, once the Hobbit's made, they're going to want him to do something else and something else.
Well, the Cimmerillion is the only other thing, right?
No, there's a bunch of other things that he could have done with it. There's, like, Sir Gawain and the Green Knight. There's...
But they don't have the rights to it. And the Tolkien family's not actually happy with the movies, so this is kind of as far as they can go.
I think that's probably a big part of it, too, is, like, they know that they have the rights to tell this particular story, so they're like, all right, let's just try to...
What, are they holding out for more money or something? I don't know.
I'm not sure. Apparently, they weren't happy with the original trilogy, which I don't know how that's possible.
They're douchebags.
But anyway, I guess they weren't. I don't know if they were happy that, like, a lot of the story got cut out or something. But it's like, it's a
Frodo
movie.
Frodo was supposed to be 40 years old.
Yeah.
They're
probably pissed
off about the Tom Bombadil.
Yeah. Tom Bombadil was their favorite character, so they were just really pissed. Anyway, I don't know. I mean, I don't have much to add to this conversation. Do you guys have anything in particular that
I'm for it.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah. I think because seeing a lot of people talking about it, I think a lot of people are confused about how the trilogy works. It's not necessarily The Hobbit as three movies. Originally, when it was proposed, it was going to be The Hobbit and then kind of this bridge film that basically takes everything that happened after The Hobbit all the way up to The Fellowship of the Ring.
Mm-hmm.
So they're now really having more time for all those other characters to fill up more screen time. So
Yeah,
because there's probably some story, because I think in Fellowship of the Ring, don't they go and visit Gimli's uncle in
Moria?
The Mines of Moria, and it's like, I think it's like Glowin or something, I can't remember what his name was.
In the Wind.
Yeah. I think that was one of the dwarves that went along with Bilbo in The Hobbit, so I think that would be kind of interesting to see, like, that happen, like the fall of Moria.
Yeah.
Which would
be included. I don't know.
Yeah.
Do you think they'll still have extended editions? Because, like, I thought from see that it's turned into three films. I'm hoping that's just going to be like, okay,
yeah,
we're filling it out, no extended editions. But I could see them getting just overzealous and just like go crazy.
Yeah, because I think what's going to happen is next summer they're going to film for two more months to round out the footage that they need for the third movie. So I'm guessing during that time they'll probably overshoot enough for extended editions. And that is probably just a milking it for more money type
of
thing.
When they come out with it, I'm buying it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm sure everybody will. But yeah, we'll see what happens there. So wanted to get to also mention... our Facebook, so you guys can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/notjustnewmovies. You can subscribe to this podcast for free in iTunes. Leave us a review there. That would be great. And
thanks to those that have.
Yes,
there's
indeed.
A couple.
Indeed. And also you guys can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/NJNMpodcast. We do have one new follower, and that is at VGamer4550. So thank you for the follow there. And let's finish up the character name game. So the name was Arturo Mendez. Arturo Mendez. Does anybody have any idea what movie that character is from?
No clue.
Mendez. All right, I'll give you a hint. The movie that it's connected to is The Watch.
It's got to be... let's see. I just happened to watch this on Netflix. Is it Michael Pena's character? Detective in... that Bill Ferrer movie. I just watched it like 2 days ago.
No, it is not a Michael Pena character.
The
It's a Ben Stiller character in a movie, because Ben Stiller is one of the main characters in The Watch.
You're very close to the previous movie you're trying to guess.
Is it that Fat Camp movie?
No, it's not. No. That is amazing. I love that movie. Heavyweights.
Heavyweights.
Plays Tony Perkis is his character.
Anchorman.
Anchorman.
There you go. Correct.
Arturo Mendez from whatever Spanish news channel or whatever. He comes in with
the river will flow with Burgundy's blood.
Indeed. All right. So there's that. Nicely done. Let's go around the circle and just tell people where they can track down more of our work on the internet as we bring this episode to a close. So Tyler, let's start with you.
Ben, you can find me at thesolarsentinel.blogspot.com. You can find me running Twitter with the handle NJNM Podcast, and we hit 100 followers on Facebook. I appreciate everyone that stepped out and clicked that. We're going to review Ginger Dead Man 3, Saturday Night Cleaver, and then After Midnight, so we're going to hit that Chinese restaurant, and that'll be coming out soon.
Awesome.
Soon.
All right. Free, let's go to you.
You can go to freereyes.com. where I have not updated anything, or geektown.com where, you know, I do stuff there sometimes.
Awesome. All right. And you're also on Twitter, yes?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter, FreeRez. I don't really tweet many things. I tweet quotes.
Yeah.
And then random things.
Your quotes are good. They're, you know, there's sometimes they're inspirational. Sometimes they're like, all right, get to work, guys. Let's do things.
Yeah. let's make it happen.
I like it, yeah. All right, Eli, how about you?
I'm also on Twitter, where I do not tweet a gosh darn thing. But that's Twitter at Elijah Reyes. You can find my writings at Geek Tyrant, where I write about random Star Wars crap and other random gadgets that appear online.
Thank you. Nice to see that, by the way. I read a lot of those.
All right, and you guys can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/BenPears. That's BenPears. You can read my writings at geektyrant.com, firstshowing.net, filmonic.com, and notjustnewmovies.com, the namesake for this podcast. Music for this episode will come courtesy of the Kazam and Steel score, maybe? I don't know. One of them will be We Genie, that god-awful song from Kazam. I know that.
And then,
maybe Men of Steel will wrap it up.
If we can. Men of Steel has Ice Cube. And it has, I think, some of the guys from, like, Cypress Hill.
All right, it's definitely end music for this then. So, awesome.
Probably the only good thing out of that movie.
Tyrant.co, guys. Yeah. You guys run that side. I like that side, too.
Yep.
They do a good job over there.
GameTyrant.co. C-O. Yeah.
Yes, not those posers at GameTyrant.com. So. Forget about them. All right. Well, that's going to bring us to a close. Special thanks to the Reyes brothers for stopping by and hanging out and actually going through the painful process of watching both Kazam and Steel. So thank you very much, guys. It was great having you on. And thank you all for listening to this and presumably going through the same terrible
hardships
that we've also endured. And we are going to be watching The Quest at long last.
It's about time.
For our 100th
Thank
episode.
You, Apple II.
So please shoot us a voicemail, email, something like that.
Voicemail, email, give Twitter, Facebook.
Give us some love for the 100th episode in whatever way you like. And we will see you guys next week.
Peace.
Catch you later.
Peace. It's like a bus full of Japanese tourists. Style to flow light, huts and river debris. She quarter keys of them shack CDs. Next MC that claim they keep it real. Shaquille gonna smack him with a meal. Chris cut clean numerical order bills. Ill. Now put it on the Ritz. The best thing since grits and fake. Man of steel. Who you with? I'm so fly when I walk, I levitate. My caliber's first rate, exceptional above grade. These who's large, guilty on every charge of being dope. Imagine Superman with a dookie rope.